Fixing hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an FU commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part two.
Hey everybody, I'm Greg Wyshynski of ESPN, your worldwide leader in primary rights holding, and college sports as well, which there was a lot of in the last week or so.
Yeah, and more coming up Thursday, the Frozen Four, baby. Lambert, elite prospects, etc. This is why I'm talking about prospects, because it's in the thing.
Right.
Sean Magnu from The Athletic.
You're in Puck Soup. College hockey, as they call it on ESPN this Thursday. It's exciting.
They call it that. They should not.
Tell us about the Frozen Four. What's going on?
Well, bit of a big news thing about that. Yesterday, UMass, I think probably the team I would have picked to win it, announced that due to COVID protocols, their starting goalie, their leading goal scorer, their third string goalie and another guy are not going to play, at least on Thursday, probably on Saturday as well, if they win. And their starting goalie, by the way, leads the nation in save percentage. So bad news for them. Now their backup goalie is their starter, and their equipment manager is their backup goalie.
Their equipment manager is their backup goalie?
Yeah, he was a backup in high school, so he's the closest thing they have to a NCAA Division I goalie.
That's wild.
Yeah. Not good for the Minutemen.
Can I ask you a question?
You can.
Does Jonathan Quick have any eligibility to
come back? I don't think he does.
Okay. It's also probably a downgrade from the equipment manager
at this point. We should also say that their now starting goalie is a guy named Matt Murray, and the Frozen Four is in Pittsburgh. And isn't that a funny thing, too?
What is that even? I hope Pierre Dorion isn't aware of that. Jeez. Yeah.
And then they're playing Minnesota Duluth, who won well, they didn't win last year, but they're the reigning two-time national champions. They look real fucking good again this season, so that'll be a tough one. And then
that's really good point. That's actually a really good point. Like, if you win the title and then there is no – because there was no championship last year, right?
Correct. They didn't have a tournament or even conference tournaments last year.
Does that still make you the reigning champion? Or
they're the reigning champions.
Is it really, though? Like, isn't it just, like, vacant now because of the thing not happening?
Well, let me put it this way. I think you might have an argument, but they had won the previous two national titles, so I think you can just go, you know what? You made it to the Frozen Four again. Third year, maybe even fourth.
You're the reigning champion based on merit? Is that how we're doing it?
Yeah, they've been to the Frozen Four. I think this is their fourth one in a row. They've won two national championships in a row. I think I'm comfortable calling that, like, if it was a fluke last year and some random-ass team won it because, you know, last season, and then even this season, is fake. Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Everything that happened this year
champion,
is fake. Yeah,
you're still the reigning champion.
That's right.
What that means. So
the Tampa Bay Lightning were the reigning champion in 2006?
Yes.
Okay.
And then the other matchup is St. Cloud versus Minnesota State. Minnesota State, famous for choking every time they get to the NCAA tournament. They finally didn't do it this year. And they look really good. I don't know how they stack up against – I think it'll be a tight game in that one. The St. Cloud Mankato game will be a tight game. But they have Mankato specifically has a goalie who I think went 21-3 this year. And is a Hobie Baker finalist. And the argument against them is that they played in what is traditionally one of the weaker conferences and absolutely beat the shit out of everybody in it. Mm-hmm. But you know, are they as good as the second best team in a conference with Minnesota Duluth and North Dakota and all those kinds of teams? I don't know. I think it'll be interesting. I think now that UMass is in tough shape, I think Duluth is probably the favorite. But
with this UMass COVID stuff, is there the opportunity to find another team based in Minnesota to put in the Frozen Four?
Right? Yeah. yeah. That's the other thing. Is already two teams before the Notre Dame and. Oh, shit, now I'm for Michigan had to pull out of the tournament before it even started because of COVID. So it was only a 14-team tournament this year. Two teams got byes to the second round. It's been a fucking mess. And people are like, hey, shouldn't you maybe have played this whole thing in a bubble like in 1 week in the NCAA? No, sir.
No,
we couldn't.
That makes sense. Sean, how do Canadians view NCAA hockey? I've always been curious.
Yeah, it's not a big thing up here. I think like the World Juniors and to a lesser extent even the Memorial Cup kind of takes our, you know, amateur hockey focus or, you know, not in the big leagues yet hockey attention away. So it's not like the March Madness tournament is a big deal up here because it's, you know, that there isn't a Canadian equivalent, yeah. But the Frozen Four, it gets coverage. It gets talked about, but it's
on TSN.
It's not a big thing.
Do you guys see it as, let me put this out there. Do you guys see it as your Canadian junior universe is like the Premier League and NCAA hockey is like MLS? Is it like that?
No, I don't. Think so. There probably was a time when it was viewed that way, but I think fans understand now that there's NCAA's good hockey, and there are certainly reasons why players would prefer that. And you see Canadian players going there, and you see American players coming up for the juniors. So there's maybe some leftover feeling of that, but I think it's more just the case that the junior league is in your town, probably. Or you probably don't have to go very far. Whereas NCAA, it's all down in the States, and it's literally closer to home to pay attention to the junior stuff.
Lambert, as a rock-ribbed American, cut you and you bleed red, white, and blue. How do you feel about Canadians that come down to play in the NCAA?
Well, there's a lot of good ones. What do I care if where they're from?
Are they taking jobs from hardworking?
They're taking jobs from good American kids. Yeah, exactly.
Next year there's going to be like 61 NCAA teams. It's not like we're like, oh, there's eight NCAA teams and all the Canadians have taken. There are plenty of opportunities for everybody, and that's Division One. You know, there's also
Division and hopefully three. You know they play for one of the 11 outside of Minnesota. That'd be exciting. The playoff races are going on in the National Hockey League. Frozen Four, by the way, a great event. Hope everybody enjoys it. I went to only one of them. I went to the
DC one, right?
The DC one where Bemidji State went on there. They went on their big winning streak and stuff. That was a really fun time. I've always wanted to go to the event again, but never really had the chance to.
That was one of the craziest ones ever. BU won it on that crazy overtime, and you know they obviously needed two goals to come back. They beat Miami, but what was it? Bemidji and Vermont were the other two teams.
Bemidji was, I think so, and it was really exciting because
I
had literally never heard of Bemidji State before that tournament, like in any walk of life. Yeah, so no, I got very
no
excited
need for you
about
to.
It. No, exactly. All right, so as we do the show this week, the NHL playoff races are really getting wacky, thanks to the utter collapse of the St. Louis Blues. The Blues have, as we do the show, an 8.8% chance of making the playoffs. That is less than the 35.2% chance the Sharks have of making the playoffs, which was at 50% before they lost to the Ducks. And now the Arizona Coyotes have a 50% chance of making the playoffs in the West Division. This is a real shocker.
This is Money Puck you're looking at?
I'm looking at Money Puck,
Just for reference, Dom has the Blues and the Sharks pretty much neck and neck, but he's got the Coyotes at 65%. and the Blues and Sharks basically dividing up the last 30-odd with a small chance of the Kings. So however you dice it, it's not looking good for the St. Louis Blues.
Dom at The Athletic, of course, data, as we all know. It's not looking good for the Blues. I've been told by Blues fans that offense has been a problem, so you could imagine some way, shape, or form a trade to get more goal scoring on that team. But Lambert, I think there'd be no point. And you and I have been, you know, town criers here for the last year about what a disaster their goaltending was going to be. You know,
I think you're taking a little more credit than you.
I've always said that Jordan Binnington was probably no. I actually, the thing about Binnington is I didn't like the contract. I don't like that kind of term for that type of goalie. But the real mistake was not giving him a veteran safety net. I know that there are reasons why they traded Jake Allen, mostly surrounding, you know,
because
the cap,
they gave him the kind of contract they just gave Jordan Binnington. Is that
expansion draft, all that shit. But like, I mean, you went into the season with Jordan Binnington and Ville Husso as his backup, and that was just a dumb mistake. And it's cost them in several games already, which, you know, could be the margin between them making the playoffs and missing the playoffs. But Lambert, I'm going to guess, based on your what's the point, that you don't see this as a situation where they should really get aggressive in trying to figure out what's gone wrong and make a push for the playoffs.
Well, they know what's gone wrong. They don't have a good roster, and they've had a lot of injuries. Like, when you combine those two things, and obviously the goaltending matters as well, but like when you look at it, like, okay, go trade for the three best goal scorers available. Get Kyle Palmieri, get Taylor Hall. I don't even know who the third guy would be, but get him too. And then what percent chance do you think you have of making the playoffs? 45?
Yeah, at best, right? Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think with this team and a lot of teams, the kind of horses are out of the barn on this one. What are you going to do, you know?
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Sean, about the Blues?
I mean, it's the writing's kind of on the wall. They've got a very tough road ahead. That said, this is a team that won a cup 2 years ago. They are still in the race. I don't look at it and say there's no way that they could beat the Avs or the Knights. They'd be underdogs, clearly. But I think if you're Doug Armstrong, like I don't know. I think on the outside we're a little too quick to throw in the towel on some teams. I could absolutely see him saying, you know what? If only because this team went from last place to a Stanley Cup 2 years ago, they've earned the right to take their best swing at this with the group that we've got together now. I'm going to go, you know, hopefully not go crazy as far as trade away future picks, prospects, what have you, to get immediate help. But I'm going to try to bring in some reinforcements, and I'm going to try to let them make a stand on this. Am I really that convinced that the Coyotes aren't going to go off the track in the next 6 weeks?
Well,
not necessarily. So let's take a run.
Here's the other thing that I just remembered. I'm just going to read to you St. Louis's remaining schedule. Vegas, Minnesota, 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 Colorado, Arizona, Colorado, 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 Minnesota, 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 Anaheim, Anaheim, Vegas, Vegas, L.A.
Anaheim games, man, that's 4 points right there. So.
But how funny is it now that they're chasing a team where they had to play seven straight games against that team? They already used up all their fucking Coyotes games this season.
We didn't realize at the time that may have been a playoff
series. That was it. That was the whole thing.
You say they play Anaheim. That's 4 free points. They got 1 point out of their last two game series with the Ducks.
So they're due.
Yeah.
They're due.
They're doomed, I think, is... they're fine.
I very much believe this is a season they should just do the thing that they did that one time where they traded Paul Stastny.
Well, they did it twice because they did it with Shattenkirk, too.
They did it
so
with
that
Shattenkirk
is the other
well.
Weird thing about Armstrong is that he's, quote-unquote, sold at the deadline twice with pretty good teams that were in the playoff hunt, arguably maybe even more so than the team he's got now. So... yeah, I don't know. I don't know what he does.
Go ship out Mike Hoffman somewhere. Like, just, you know, change the configuration of your roster a little bit, and then and just know the reality of your surroundings that you just don't have it for whatever reason, and it could be a myriad of reasons. I mean, you know, even a simple thing is just like not having Pietrangelo and Bouwmeester on your D, even though your D on paper looks pretty deep. Like the way that those two guys play and taking them out of that system could fundamentally change the system. I don't know. I do know this though. Like I know it's not a probability, especially when like every time they seem to be taking a step forward, that they fall backwards 10 steps. But I would much rather the Sharks sneak into the playoffs than the Coyotes. Like I don't need 7 games between the Coyotes and the Avalanche.
We're all of a sudden Darcy. 7, Greg.
Well, what happened? But you know, like the Sharks would be super fun. Like that'd be a real fun series. They're a bunch they're a bunch of assholes, and they cause a bunch of chaos.
That's true.
The last thing I need in my life is like for Darcy Kemper to have 4 good games and take out the fucking Avalanche in the first round.
I mean, I'm looking at like just the goal differences, and this is the NHL.com goal differences, so not real goal differences, but minus 11 for Arizona, minus 20 for St. Louis, minus 21 for San Jose, minus 7 and falling for the Kings, and minus 39 for the Ducks. Like, there are eight teams in the division. 5 of them have negative goal differences because Colorado's a plus 50.
Yeah. All right. Well, Colorado, Vegas, and Minnesota, all very solid. And then we wait for that fourth spot. The West is kind of set, except for that last spot. The North is very much set. I mean, like, it's Toronto, Montreal, Winnipeg, Edmonton. We should probably talk about Vancouver and the COVID that's run through the team. The Brazilian variant of COVID.
Maybe. Did you see that thing last night that was like, some doctor was like, I don't know that it's the Brazilian one. I have no idea. I have no knowledge of that, or some shit like that. And people were like, come on. But.
Well, they all got sick, but also had a craving for caipirinhas. So it may in fact be the Brazilian variant. It sucks, man. You know, the North Division got away scot-free from the COVID stuff for most of the season, and then Vancouver gets absolutely slammed. I find it to be absolutely ridiculous that the NHL is even going to attempt to try to get them to play 56 games. Everyone knew coming into this season what the deal was, that there was a very good chance that some of these teams wouldn't be able to complete their seasons. So you just pick up one of the contingency plans. Either everybody
absolutely
has the same. Yeah.
But what does it benefit the league to say that right now?
Do you think that they will, though? Because I don't. I really think they're going to try to get them to play 56 games.
They're going
to
try.
Yeah, they're
going to
get the
But they're not going to be able to. So that's going to be it. But it doesn't – there's no reason for the NHL to say that now.
I agree.
They just say, you know, our plan is to play 56 games, and then when it becomes obvious that you can't do that, you announce that then. I don't – because if they say right now they're not going to play 56, then immediately everyone says, then how many are they going to play? And if you give the wrong number for that, then it's I would be shocked if Vancouver plays 56 games, completely shocked. Especially when you look at their schedule, like they've got a big chunk of games against the Senators at the end of the year. You don't need those games. That doesn't. I understand that. You may want to, for the four playoff teams, try to make sure everybody gets their games in against the Canucks, just so that it's not doesn't feel unbalanced. But there's no reason to do those games. I'd be shocked if they played all of them, but I don't blame the league for pretending like they're going to now.
How much is it going to be great when the NHL starts rescheduling these Canucks games and it just happens to be the ones against the playoff teams that they find room in the schedule to reschedule?
Yeah.
They probably should, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah, I mean, they should totally, yeah.
I mean, but they're going to have to come up with some bullshit excuse. Year about how the Canadians were, like, rolling over the Canucks every time they played them, but they did. And meanwhile, like, Edmonton's barely played Vancouver at all. I could see the Oilers being like, well, wait a second. Like,
we want the free points as well. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. But there's a certain amount, like the reports out of Vancouver about how these guys are doing and how much they've been impacted by the COVID that's run through the team is like,
it's scary.
It's
kind of
scary.
Man.
It's scary shit. It's
scary. And it's, I don't know if I, maybe not as much now as a couple days ago, but like over the weekend, like, have you ever been in a situation where you didn't know what was going on, but the people who did know what was going on, it felt like they weren't saying everything, and you start getting really nervous. And I was starting to get that vibe from some of the more plugged in people, and you know, so far, knock on wood, we're a couple days into the week, and it doesn't sound like things are getting significantly worse anymore. But it's still
once they start talking about like family members getting it and shit, then all of a sudden it becomes like a lot more dire.
Well, and you know? Staff and everybody and they will, right? I mean, there's no, you know, to state the very obvious, but we need to remember it. It's not like, you know, COVID isn't an ACL where you go home and you rehab it and it sucks that your team doesn't have you. But, you know, this can, you know, it not only can it spread to family members, but there's probably guys who now, you know, the wife and kids are out of the house and they can't see them and they can't see, you know, family and this and that. Like this whole, like, there's going to be some great / horrible stories to be written when this is all over, this whole season, about like what this year did to some of the players, because we've all, you know, for obvious reasons, we're all focused on just the sports side of it. That's our job. That's what we have to do. Who's going to win? Who's going to finish first? Who's going to make a trade? But, you know, I feel like at some point we're going to hear stories where people are going to be like, yeah, no, that was the worst 6 months of my life. I hated it every single day. And it was awful. And I didn't care about how the season was going at all. I could barely get myself out of bed to go to the rink in the morning because it sucked. And we're all going to kind of be like, yeah.
You occasionally are starting to see the mask slip on that a little bit. Yep. I mean, you know, obviously there's been some stories written, like Emily wrote one about the mental health aspect of the season. But you're also seeing, like, you know, I talked to a couple GMs last week for the trade deadline stuff, and they're all kind of like the same way. They're just like, we're trying to get through this. We're just trying to get done with it. Like, we're not – if someone's going to hoist the cup and they're going to be very, very happy, and that's great. But, like, we just want to not be here and do this anymore and play in front of, you know, almost empty buildings and have to constantly worry about these protocols. Like, they just fucking hate it. They just fucking hate this season. They just want it to be done. Like, that's the vibe that you get when you start talking to these guys off the record, is that just, like, everybody's just like – head down, push forward, get through it, and hopefully next year gets back to some semblance of normalcy. Anyways, so the North is pretty set. It'd be awesome if we can get a little Habs-Leafs action in the playoffs, right?
Looks like we're headed that way.
I love it.
Which would be the first time in over 40 years, which is pretty amazing considering they've been in the same division.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, they were in different conferences for – half of that, sure, but they were in the same. They've been in the same division for over 20 years, so it's that's
is there is gonna be something. Is there one team in that rivalry that like would never make the playoffs, Sean?
They did during the last 20 years. Actually, even when the Leafs were good, that was when Montreal fell off. Like the last 20 years, it's as if every year the hockey gods are like, all right, pick one of you to be good right now. And then obviously the 20 years before that, the Leafs were garbage, and the 1 year that they should have met in the Stanley Cup final, something happened. I don't remember what.
Oh boy, here we go again. In the East Division, again, like the Rangers are trying to make it interesting as best they can, but you look at Dom's projections for the standings, and you've got the Islanders, Capitals, Bruins, and Penguins pretty much all locked in. And the Penguins now, I mean, it didn't go very well last night as we do the show. You know, making their push for the top spot, the whole thing. So that's kind of locked in right now, too. Like, the Flyers have a 4% chance right now of making the playoffs.
Yeah, they're real bad. This is the division, I think, that is the most interesting because of how, on any given night, any of the, like, five or six best teams in it, like, leaving New Jersey and Buffalo out of it, obviously.
Hey!
Come on. Any given night, you're like, oh, they look like real – like Philadelphia looked really good against Boston last night. And they lost, but they looked pretty good. And then, you know, Carter Hart turns into Carter Hart sometimes. And but then, like, the Rangers can look really good. They'll hang an 8 spot on anybody. The Islanders can look really good or terrible. Boston, same deal. You know, they won, but again, they didn't look very good. They gave up, like, 40-plus shots or something. The Capitals, who knows if they're any good. It's a fascinating division for, like, all the wrong reasons as far as the teams are concerned, but
Two things about that division. First off, what odds do you put on Lundqvist coming back?
Not good.
Not good. Okay.
Secondly, like, you mean like next year or?
No, I mean like by for the playoffs. Like he's like with the team for the playoffs.
I can't see that.
I'll put it at 35%.
Wow.
And then what happens? Like it. You suddenly have a big name backup goalie who hasn't played all year.
Your 45-year-old goalie.
Well, I think
starter has just, one bad game, and everyone goes, "Oh, let's turn to the Hall of Famer." And
I'm saying maybe you taxi squad it up and have him around, and you know he comes in and gives the big emotional speech at some point, and he's perfectly manicured and well coiffed, and everybody's here's like, the real dazzled question by it.
If somehow the Capitals win the Cup, do we start acting like Henrik Lundqvist has a cup? Because I don't think he can in good faith.
I don't think he gets his name on the cup.
Like, yeah, well, teams get the chance. Like, they can put any one guy on it who they want or whoever, right?
Yeah, but he has to have played. Like, they're not going to...
It would have been... It'd be pretty amazing if they were just like, we won this for Henrik. Yeah. Just like...
If the scenario you describe where he, like, comes in to be around the team sort of thing...
Yeah, taxi squad something. Yeah.
Which, again, should somebody who had recent heart surgery be in this
around the Capitals?
No. I don't know. But, I could see something like that. But no, I mean, they're not going to – teams can ask to put guys on the cup who don't meet the regular qualifications, but the league says no sometimes. And I don't know. I know everyone loves the guy. But if he's literally not played ever a game for the franchise – never put on the uniform other than the opening press conference. I can't see them.
I can't tell if it would be funnier if they were like, oh yeah, Henrik Lundqvist, Stanley Cup champion, or if they were like, come on, you don't get to act like you had anything to do with this.
I think they should play it up. I think they should. They should have him on the taxi squad. They should wear HL patches throughout the playoffs. Just like, give him his cup. Be the ultimate honor. But is it the ultimate honor? Is this not the honorary Oscar of hockey if Henrik Lundqvist gets a cup ring for being a part of...
This is one of those participation trophies all these millennials are always talking about.
Right. The other thing I wanted to ask you about the East Division is something that a lot of listeners brought to my attention yesterday, which was the Brian Lawton theoretical trade on NHL Network. Did you see this yesterday?
No.
Okay. This is a puck soup adjacent story. Buffalo Sabres trade Eichel and Rasmus Dahlin within the current division to the New Jersey Devils for Jack Hughes and Nico Hischier.
Who says no?
Who says no? I think the answer is New Jersey says
I'm
no
just,
to giving up
I'm just saying,
two.
Yeah, I'm just – they're younger. There's more cost control. I mean, and here's the thing too. Like, this is the sort of the grander thing. And I know that on paper, people are like, "This is so fucking dumb." Eichel and Dahlin are much better. This is not something in a bubble. You can't take two guys from a team that never wins. They're fucking miserable there, and put them on another team that never wins, and now they're fucking miserable there. You can't do that.
I mean, you can. There's no law against it.
Yet.
Thanks, we're
Biden.
Working on it. It's in the Biden infrastructure bill.
Oh, is it infrastructure week finally?
Yeah, come on,
fantastic
man.
Fantastic news. Central Division. Last one we didn't need to talk about. And you know, probably the last one people think about, let's be honest. Carolina Hurricanes, Tampa Bay Lightning, the Florida Panthers, all at 100% to make the playoffs, according to Dom. Then you get your Nashville Predators at 46%, the Dallas Stars at 27%, and the fading fast Chicago Blackhawks at 25%. Well, any chance the Stars or Blackhawks overcome this Nashville juggernaut to make the playoffs?
Let's put it this way. How bad do all these teams have to be that the Dallas Stars, which is a team 13, 14, and 10, has a better chance to make the playoffs than them? And we have to act like, oh, you know what? Actually, Chicago is pretty good. Fuck off. Like Nashville,
a Dallas team that's had their season interrupted three times, twice for COVID and once because their state broke.
Yeah, well, and like I get that, but like you look at them and you go, well, they suck too, though. You know what I mean? Like I've said it a couple of times now, but they seem to have like an ideological thing of like we're never going to be more than one game plus or minus 500. Like we're always going to be just right one game above or below 500, and then we will lose or win the next game. Whatever gets us back to 500. They've done it all year. Every time you look at the standings, they're 10-10-6 or some shit like that.
Right. Right.
But, yeah, Nashville's only doing it because Saros came back from injury and he's going off.
And that's it, right? This is mostly a pretty good goaltender, but having a super heater, and that can end at any time. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's Kevin Lankinen, right?
So, yeah, that's kind of our one good race we could literally be sitting here a week from now, even depending on how things go in the West, going like, yeah, that's the only race left. It's those teams.
Or hear me out. John Hines is going to win the Jack Adams for turning this ship around.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. Literally, what? No. Nobody? No. Yeah. No.
Well, if Jeremy Colleton was going to win it when Lankinen was going off, why not John Hines? You know?
That division is, and again, like much like in the West, it's a bunch of teams climbing over each other like the zombies on the wall in World War Z to get mud stomped by the Lightning. Most likely.
And the other thing we should say, they're crawling over each other to get away from that fourth place position. They're like, no, we suck, we're the worst ones. You go ahead. And Nashville's like, I guess we'll do it for now. And then, you know, 2 weeks from now, Nashville's going to be like, Columbus, what do you say, guys? Who cares?
Oh, God, no, please.
No, I believe me. Yeah, of course. But you know what's going to happen? It's going to fucking
probably
happen.
If you are David Poile, what do you do? I've been on Nashville radio a bunch in the last 2 weeks, and apparently, everybody in Nashville is really excited about this playoff push, and I'm just like, you cannot not sell.
You have to sell.
You have to sell.
I've written about this twice in the last few days. I have no idea what they should do or what they will do. I think they're one of the most fascinating teams over the next few days because this was the number one seller for the last few weeks, right? Matthias Ekholm, other guys.
We've been hearing about Ekholm.
Michael Granlund, Eric Walla, yeah.
And yeah, like probably that's the right call. Like, you know, I think we can all imagine 2 months from now sitting there going, yeah, they didn't sell at the deadline and they either missed the playoffs or they made it and they got swept in three games by the Lightning because it was that bad. The league was like, nah,
we can't play a fourth. It's so ugly.
Exactly. And then you go, oh, they should. But at the same time, like, you know, first of all, again, I think we underestimate the level of parity in this league when we say certain teams like they can't, even if they made the playoffs, they would. Who knows, man? Like they look really good when their one goalie gets hot. That could happen again in May. Like, you know, who's to say? And also, this is David Poile, 40 years without a cup. Do you think he's looking to do a five-year rebuild right now with this team of $8 million forwards that he's assembled? Or do you think he's sitting there like, no, man, let's push a few more chips in and see where this goes?
I will not allow you to besmirch the name of the most winningest general manager in NHL history. And two, I don't know what he's thinking vis-a-vis a rebuild because he's probably thinking he could be out of a job after the season. Yeah. Depending on what the ownership is.
Well,
I mean,
he's in his 70s. He could be out of a job anytime. Like, it's not, that's it. I don't know.
Which guy does Buffalo hire, David Poile or Jim Rutherford? Rutherford probably because of Kevin Adams, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you would think, but they could have done that already. And
yeah.
Who knows? And Buffalo's the other. I mean, we'll get to it, I guess, later in the show, but that's the other team that I think is the most interesting one to watch. Maybe Poile and Kevin Adams make a deal now.
Oh,
Taylor Hall to the Predators for a little too much draft capital going back the other way, and then
at
the end of the year, David Poile jumps over the old the old Ron Francis mole Eddie Johnson trick. Like, yeah, we could do this.
Do you think Taylor Hall ends up signing long term in Buffalo?
Why would he do that to himself?
He better not. I will go there and physically pull the pen out of his hand. My God.
He's being kept out of the lineup, and Kyle Palmieri, as we do the show, is being kept out of the lineup for the Devils. So you assume both are gone. What would be your Taylor Hall move? I got one that I like.
I think there's a lot of places that
I agree
he could go. Like I think certainly just in terms of where would he fit in the lineup, there's a bunch of teams. In fact, there's the list of teams that he would help is longer than the list of teams where you go, I don't really see a fit there. The cap situation and just the money situation is obviously a big impediment, and there are going to be teams out there. Like, could he help Colorado? Yes, absolutely. Is Colorado going to give up assets to bring in a guy like that? Yeah, maybe, but you could understand if they were like, no, we're good, we'll direct that somewhere else. But yeah, no, I want to hear your...
I think this is great because it could either be a disaster or super fun, which is to the Blues trade Mike Hoffman and a first, let's call it, to the Sabres for Taylor Hall, and the Sabres pick up half the salary.
Again, I want to see Taylor Hall in the playoffs, man. I don't need this shit where he goes to another team where, oh, they might make... They're fucking terrible. The Blues stink. Adding Taylor Hall doesn't fix anything.
Yeah.
Well, it makes life a little bit more exciting for them. And Ryan, you're saying you want to see Taylor Hall in the playoffs. I mean, how many times has that happened?
That's why I want to see him in the playoffs.
But do you think that maybe has it ever occurred to you that maybe he's the Tiki Idol? Like, maybe he's the curse? Like, if he goes to the Oilers, all of a sudden fucking Vancouver's in the playoffs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, my answer is I want to see Taylor Hall on either Tampa or Colorado. I just want these guys to load up, and also for Taylor Hall to have a really good shot at winning a cup.
Well, I mean, the Leafs are another option. That's
well, I want them to win a cup around though, and so.
What's that?
I want them to win a cup though. So
See, I think the Leafs are like a perfect spot because he would just blend in.
Yeah,
wouldn't he? Or is Toronto still crazy? Yeah. Where like if they lost in the playoffs, they'd blame Taylor Hall for it.
Well, I think. At this point, Taylor Hall is going to blend in anywhere. Like, Taylor Hall is not a guy who shows up and, you know, you're taking his picture as he gets off the plane at the airport.
There's only one place he wouldn't blend in. There's only one place if he goes to Boston, he can't blend in there.
Maybe, yeah.
They would see him as, like, second-line savior.
Well, do you want to hear – this is probably, like, as cynical a take as I could have. Yeah, if he goes to Toronto and they flame out in the first round, he probably does take a big chunk of the blame, probably too much, from that fan base and that media, which might not be a bad idea to go and get him if you're the Leafs, because you're still going, they're going to turn on – if the Leafs lose in the playoffs, they're going to turn on somebody, and it's better to be Taylor Hall than Austin Matthews or Mitch Marner or whoever else, because I don't even think – Freddie Anderson was going to be the guy, but he's probably not even going to be the goalie. So if I'm Kyle Dubas, I'm like – you know what? If it works, it works. And if it doesn't work, I don't know.
So you just push Taylor Hall into the lion pit, in other words.
That's right?
That's there you go. It's perfect. I like your Colorado idea, though, Lambert.
I wanted him to sign there this summer.
I think that's a play. They clearly want one more guy in their top six. I think you could put him with Nazem Kadri. And he could pair with him quickly and seamlessly. Speaking of pairing quickly and seamlessly, today's episode of Puck Soup is sponsored by Raycon Wireless Earbuds. You know this is one of our favorite products. You can tell when we put over the products that we use because they're great, and these are products that we use, and they're great. I just used my Raycons yesterday for a little joggeroo around Brooklyn. Very exciting to jog around Brooklyn. See the Statue of Liberty as you're jogging.
Only
avoid
in New York, baby.
Oh, that's right. You know, eating a pretzel and a hot dog as I'm jogging. No, that's probably not how it works. Raycon has fantastic wireless earbuds. No dangling wires or stems to get in your way. They come in a range of stylish colors. But the thing that we love about the Raycons, folks, is how comfortable they are inside your ear. They're not falling out. They're not awkward. They feel like they were tailor-made for you and your ears. They also sound great. That's the other thing, too, as well as starting at half the price of other premium audio brands. I love my Raycons, and you'll love them, too. And they're offering a 15% off deal on all their products for Puck Soup listeners. Here's what you got to do. Go to buyraycon.com/puck. That's buyraycon.com/puck, P-U-C-K. And that's it. You get 15% off your entire Raycon order. So feel free to grab a pair of earbuds and then a spare. And you know, get one for every day of the week. Go crazy. That's 15% off at buyraycon.com/puck. That's buyraycon.com/puck. Seriously, folks, very, 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 very highly endorsed product here. If you're somebody who's been searching for a good pair of earbuds to lounge around the house, I like to put one in my left ear and listen to a podcast while I'm cooking to have the right ear open to converse with my wife. Isn't that the way to do it, folks? Just like have a little distraction, but then also be able to still hear the person you love when they're talking to you. Highly recommend that setup as well. All right. Other trade deadline stuff. We mentioned Nashville being a fascinating team. Obviously, Buffalo's a fascinating team. Winnipeg, to me, is a real fascinating team. Like, they are so loaded at forward. They got a great goalie, but the blue line has not been, you know, a favorite of mine for 2 years running. I wish that the Predators would trade Ekholm because I feel like Jets would be a perfect landing place.
That was the perfect spot, and if that gets yanked away, then I'm not really sure who the plan B is for Winnipeg. Because you're right, like, the thing with Winnipeg is, and this is maybe a little bit of wishful thinking, but you know, to state the obvious, if you're out there trying to trade for one stud defenseman, you're doing it thinking that you're going to add one stud defenseman. But the thing with Winnipeg is, Josh Morrissey was really good.
Oh, man,
we had Jacob Trouba, and he's been really not good since. So there is that kind of feeling of, if we could get the right guy, like, maybe he's one of these guys where he needs the right guy to play with to get his game up to that level, and if we bring the right guy in and they click, we're actually getting two stud defensemen for the price of one, and that's how you talk yourself into Ekholm, and now suddenly if Ekholm's off the table, I don't know who plan B is out there that makes me think, this is a big difference maker.
You know, there are a few guys, but he's definitely, you know, the
Well, you've got this – it's interesting. The trade deadline kind of works out where there's one position that's really weak, which is center, which is why you see, like, Granlund get all the attention he's gotten from Nashville. And then there's one position that's kind of deep and there's a few options, which is defensive defenseman. You got your Ekholm, who also puts up points. You got your Alex Goligoski, assuming he's going to be available. You got your David Savard with the Blue Jackets. You got a few guys that fit that mold that if you're looking for that type of player, there's a few of them out there. So if that's what they're looking for, there are going to be other options. It's just a matter of knowing that you're going to have to compete against other teams that are in the market for the same guy.
You know what's an interesting one, by the way, and I got to look on Cap Friendly real fast just to remind myself. But
can I just tell you that I was on the radio yesterday and I mentioned Cap Geek?
I felt like an
internet old. That's when's the last time Cap Geek existed? It was like 5 years ago.
Oh, I think longer than that now. Yeah,
longer than that. Oh my God! It was the hockey equivalent of being like, I check my MySpace page. It just felt like such a fucking fossil.
Anyway, I think you know who should be available, and you got to wonder at this point because of all the reporting from last year and stuff. Seth Jones only has 1 year left after this one, and he's UFA. If you're Columbus, he's not playing that well. And you don't want to get into a situation where everybody's expecting you, well, you got to re-sign Seth Jones, franchise defenseman, whatever.
Yeah.
I think they look at Seth Jones as an anomaly in an anomalous year. But that said, they've got the same problem with Werenski, where
he's an RFA, though.
Well, but the point being is that in both – okay, well, so is Dubois.
Yeah, no, look, I agree.
Where he goes.
I think in both cases – out, though.
Yeah, but in both cases, you have a situation where you're getting to that point with these players where they may not want to be in Columbus anymore for various and sundry reasons.
I really still feel like when it comes to wanting to be in Columbus, you kind of have to wait and see what life is like under the new coach that we all assume is going to be there.
The nicest human being imaginable.
That's always the way it goes. You go from the player's coach to the mean coach, and then you go from the mean coach to the player's coach. So, yeah, when Bruce Boudreau is there on opening night, then he's eating chicken wings with everybody.
Nope.
And
it's, nicer. Jason Spezza. Like, that's how nice they're going to have to go.
That's how they need, yeah.
Go completely the opposite direction.
Just giving guys candy at the end of every shift.
Yeah,
good job
right
there. Have Snickers.
That's right.
They're going to hire like Jimmy Fallon, just somebody who is just overly gushy
and the little joyous kid who did the Herb Brooks impression. He gets the job.
Well, that kid's 15 years old now. He's going to be close to like his parents are telling him to get a job, and he's like, yeah, I'll go be the coach of the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Probably doing that impression on TikTok right now.
Oh, I bet.
And you say he's nice, but like when he said school up.
Well, if he's 15, he's not nice.
There's no way.
So I revise my statement.
Jesus, we've referenced Cap Geek and the Herb Brooks kid in the last 3 minutes on this show. Let's keep going back. All right. So the Jets are fascinating. Predators fascinating. Sabres fascinating. The Leafs are fascinating because I feel like they're going to keep doing things just because they know that they've got something special this year.
I mean, the Leafs, in theory, should be the all-in team, but Pierre had an interview with Kyle Dubas, and it was kind of like, you know, now that they're playing well, they're starting to get some clearance on top of that division. Do you go, you know, maybe the pressure's off? I think that's a bluff. I think that's sending a message to other teams that, hey, you know, the Leafs don't have to make a deal, so, you know, ratchet the price down a little bit. But this Leaf season is not about, like, let's win the division.
No.
It's about you have to win. You know, losing in the first round would be a disaster. Even losing in the second round makes the season a big disappointment. I feel like you've got to at least get out of the division. So it really doesn't matter what the standings look like right now. You need to bring in as much as you can. And obviously there's always a point where the price gets ridiculous. But if you're ever going to overpay, this is the year to do it when we've said it a million times, the path out of the division, Edmonton's tough, Winnipeg's tough, Montreal's tough, but there's no Boston, there's no Tampa. Like there will be presumably next year. This is your year, man. Like I don't buy this idea that maybe the pressure's off in Toronto. I think not that the pressure is ever off in Toronto, but this is your year to Voltron as many star players together as you can and take
absolutely
your swing.
The other thing, you know, to the point about if the prices get too ridiculous, do we feel like there's just going to be a ton of sellers because of how stratified the races are this year? You know what I mean? Like, and does that then drive prices down, especially – you know, the big question is, you know, whether teams are going to want to take back money and blah, blah, blah. I think a lot of them won't for obvious reasons. But, like, I'm, you know, looking at the standings here, you're like, there should be 4-plus sellers in every division.
Yeah. The real question – 14 teams already locked into the playoffs. So they're – you know, this idea that usually at the deadline it's the bubble teams that have to make moves, and there's not a lot of bubble teams. Some of those contenders who in theory could be buyers are either capped out or don't have the budget to spend to bring anyone in. So there's that. And the other piece of it is draft picks this year are kind of being discounted because, you know, what's especially if you're like, really, what's the difference? You trade a second round pick versus a fifth when nobody's seen anybody. It's going to feel like a pretty random draft. So, the prices, even if the prices are the same, the prices come down. Like we could see the market start to crater over the next few days, which could lead to a very, very quiet. Like, I'm not ruling out the idea that we could go the next 5 days and see stunningly little movement.
Well, yeah. I wrote about this a couple weeks ago. Like, beyond the draft pick thing, there's, like, three things that are unprecedented happening at the same time. The flat cap, which is going to, you know, be a flat cap for the next several seasons, so teams don't have a lot of wiggle room. The Kraken, which is going to severely influence the amount of players with term that get moved.
Yep.
And then the third thing is, like we talked about before with the team like the Blues, like, you're going to have general managers and coaches that simply don't want to overreact to this season. Like, you mentioned Seth Jones. I mean, like, do you really want to overreact to a guy that's traditionally been one of the better defensemen in the league having a shit season
in an anomalous year?
You know. But he's not been this bad, though.
Oh, no, for sure not. But, like, is that just, you know, like, now that's reality catching up with?
I don't think so. And I don't think it's reality catching up with Carter Hart. I don't think it's reality catching up with Travis Konechny or any of these guys that are having not good seasons in a fucked up year. Like,
the pandemic itself, like, not the way the pandemic affects the league, but the fact that we're in the middle of a pandemic, first of all, I think a lot of players who normally might have no trade clauses that would be happy to waive them might say, no, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not my kid's school just got shut down. I'm not doing this. And there may be GMs who look at this and go, you know, yeah, I could trade this guy for a fourth round pick. Do I really want to do that? Like, at some point, is that, you know, not that there's any morality in pro sports, but, like, at some point, is it worth me to, like, throw this guy's life into turmoil? And maybe more so, especially for the Canadian teams, because we're behind up here as far as how things are going. But there may be cases where, like, players are going to GMs going, like, don't trade me right now. Like, I don't need to pack up and move across the country or maybe to a different country in the middle of all this. And you're sitting there going, like, if I'm getting you're still going to trade Taylor Hall. You're still going to be certain guys who are going to go. But am I going to get a fifth round pick for this guy? Is that really worth it to look him in the eye and go, like, yeah, sorry, man. I know your parents aren't doing great right now, but you're going to the West Coast. Off you go. Head to the airport. You got to be there tomorrow.
What you just said is the single greatest indictment of the Buffalo Sabres I've ever heard, because Eric Staal fucking said, I'll go to Canada and quarantine. Yeah. To get away from this franchise.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Yeah. It's interesting, especially like you said, because the flat cap for and Seattle, like, it creates so many moving parts that are, you know, like, even this summer might not get sorted out until after the expansion draft. And so, yeah, like, the idea of, oh, all these guys are going to – I don't think, you know. I think you're right that it's going to be relatively quiet. And
yeah. And I feel like that's baked into the expectations now. Like, everyone is kind of already understands that this isn't going to be a regular deadline. I'm saying I could see it being significantly less than even that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm with you. There's a part of me that really hopes it isn't going to be just a phrase that people are using, a deadline, but remains to be seen.
It's the NHL, you know, always there on the side of it's going to be a dud.
Couple things. We ran our latest awards watch on ESPN. Other places obviously do their awards watches around this time too. Top three for the Hart, based on the people that I surveyed. McDavid is leading by a country mile.
Yeah.
Matthews and Kane's still sort of in it, just because he's, like, the reason that the Blackhawks are relevant outside of some better goaltending than expected. But I mean, if they're not going to be a playoff team, obviously he's not going to win it, which would probably open the door for a number of guys, McKinnon being one, Crosby being another, who's all of a sudden, I think, in the top 10 for scoring. They'll never give it to Vasilevskiy because he's a goalie, but I think Barkov is going to have a real interesting case if the Panthers keep doing what they're doing. But he'll get that Ryan O'Reilly, Anze Kopitar thing of getting the Selkie as the de facto MVP for a two-way center. I bet that happens.
Yeah, I don't understand why nobody's talking about Connor Hellebuck for this award again. The Jets stink, and it's like him and Nick Ehlers, and the rest of the team's horrible. And because those two guys are so good, it doesn't matter.
No.
Like, I truly don't, like, you know, I think Vasilevsky's interesting because he's having a great season, but, like, don't you get the feeling that you could put any fucking goalie in the league back there and they'd be pretty good? You know, like, no. Maybe they wouldn't be where they are in the standings, but they'd be great. And if you took Connor Hellebuck off the Winnipeg Jets, they'd be the Calgary Flames.
My only concern there is that he finished sixth for the Hart last year in a year where
which was too low.
Absolutely. That's what I'm saying. Like, he grabbed that team by the scruff of its neck and made it relevant and still only got the sixth in the voting.
Yep.
And so that's my concern about him being a candidate this year. Because remember, the awards watch is like who's going to win versus who should win. And I completely agree that he should be in the mix for the Hart. Norris, Hedman, I think Adam Fox has broken through the cacophony to maybe be a finalist.
Good work.
Although there's been an interesting sort of backlash saying that actually he was better last year.
He was better last year. He absolutely was.
But I think now that you're starting to read articles that are doing the, like, is this the new Brian Leetch? It's hard to not imagine that he's going to have a certain amount of support outside of his division. The other one's interesting, though, because what you have is a slew of not name brands that could all be in contention for that other spot.
Yeah.
Darnell Nurse, Jacob Chychrun. It's both Sam Girard and Devin Taves.
Let me stop you right there with Chychrun. There's a guy on the Edmonton Oilers who's going to be up for it. They're not going to give it to a guy on the fucking Coyotes over him. Come on.
I completely agree. And then you've got some brand names. You've got your Shea Theodore, Chris Letang. Drew Doughty's tip. He's good.
Doughty?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. These people don't fucking watch the sport, man.
And then you got Cale Makar, whose issue is sample size because he did miss
he missed 12 a bunch games.
I think that in a season – now, we should talk about briefly the change in voting. So the PHWA, which votes on the Hart, the Norris, the Selke, and the Calder, changed their voting system this year where they're going to do 20 voters from each of the four divisions – and then 20 at-large voters, of which Emily and I are at-large voters. And so the idea being that it's assumed that everyone's kind of just focused in on their intra-division stuff. So to not throw it all out of whack, because the North Division would have had a hell of a lot more voters than the other divisions, they're going to, you know, separate it into these sort of categories. So we'll see how that works. But I think what you need is candidates that kind of break through the divisional walls. And to me, that means a brand name. And that to me means that along with Hedman and Fox, it would not shock me to see John Carlson get the other nomination.
Oh, boy.
I know.
Oof.
Well, how familiar is a Central or East Division voter with John Carlson versus Darnell Nurse?
No, I get it. But, like, again, like, your job is to watch the fucking sport. Like,
I agree.
They pay you to do it. So maybe try to get it right instead of just being like, well, I've heard of this guy. First of all, you should have heard of all of these fucking guys. It's your fucking job. But
this is very true.
Jesus Christ.
The Calder, I've long felt, is going to be a forward, a goalie, and a defenseman. And so I'll stick with that and say it's Kaprizov in a walk, probably still Lankinen, and then Ty Smith as your top three.
Sure. Who cares? Doesn't matter. Okay. Fucking Kaprizov.
Vezina voted on by the general managers. Vasilevsky, Fleury, Grubauer. Sound right?
Grubauer?
No?
What about this fucking guy? He plays for Winnipeg Jets.
Connor Hellebuck?
He's like the reigning Vezina winner. He's like the best goalie in the league on a dog shit team.
Who do you knock out of there? Grubauer?
Or Fleury.
Oh.
Fleury's not going to have the games played by the end of the year.
And the other thing, too, about Fleury, I actually mentioned this in the piece today. Like, Fleury also famously not getting the support of the general managers at any point in his career. He's never been a Vezina finalist. So you might be right on that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's earned that over the course of his career, I think, is not being a Vezina finalist very often. So,
yeah.
Like, he's having an unbelievable year, but I, you know, again, much like Vasilevsky, you go, well, I mean, they'd be good no matter who's back there. So.
Mm. Let's see here. Barkov, Bergeron, Mark Stone for the Selke. What do you think?
Sure.
Okay.
That sounds fun.
All right. Jack Adams. Quenneville's going to win it in a walk. I would say the other two finalists could be Sheldon Keefe and Barry Trotz. What say you?
Keefe's an I think Trotz is a great pick. You know, the Islanders, again, not a lot of talent. They're right near the top of the league. They keep doing it. So, but Keefe is interesting just because it's like everybody thought they were going to be good this year. And they're not, like, blowing the competition out of the water. They're the best team in Canada, but they're not, like, destroying everybody. And it seems like every other week they lose two games and someone goes, is the team that just beat the Toronto Maple Leafs the best team in Canada? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
And so I think, you know, based on the history of the award, like, there's going to be a team that – whoa, where'd they come from? And I think it's Dean Evason, right? Like Dean Evason, Minnesota Wild. Everybody,
yeah.
Everybody goes Minnesota Wild fucking rocks. Like they're fun to watch. They're really good. Maybe not so much on the road, I guess. But you know, when they have last change, they're really good. And yeah, I don't know. I think it ought to be Dean Evason, just based on people thought certain very smart people thought they would be good this year. But, like, I don't think even
– like a genius, like a super genius?
Some are saying. I don't think anybody thought they'd be this good. So, yeah, I think that's a good pick. But,
and,
like,
he also checks the boxes that people like, which is he's new on the job.
Yep.
First full year. Like, for whatever reason, that really seems
that matters.
To resonate with the people who vote on this award. So I would be surprised – putting aside who should or shouldn't, because I think we should just, it should be the best coaches. It should be the same names year after year for this award, but yeah. It isn't. I think he is a guy who I'd be surprised if he wasn't a finalist.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Finally, on the ESPN tip, we also published the final two top 10 rankings and the poll of the players and the team officials that we did. If you haven't seen it, I will give it to you now. Connor 1, McKinnon 2, Matthews 3.
Kyle Connor number 1. That's a surprise.
Kyle, yeah.
Connor Hellebuck. Wow, he did it.
It was actually Connor Carrick. Crazy. No. Sidney Crosby 4, Draisaitl 5. Crosby had a Draisaitl. Eichel 6, Bergeron 7, Barkov 8, Braden Point 9, and Matt Barzal 10, which means that Ryan O'Reilly, a guy that I thought was Garen fucking teed to be in the top 10, did not make it, and my Matt Barzal did.
I'm not surprised, especially Barzal. Like, he's had some crazy games and highlight reels.
He's
this
unbelievable.
Year. Like, O'Reilly's so one of those good guys who sounds like when you say his name and you look at what he's done, you go, yeah, it's a top 10 center for sure. And then you do that for a few more guys, and you're like, I've got 13 guys on my
absolutely
top
right.
10.
The number of I think once you get out of like the top three, even the number of centers in the league where you can very credibly go that's a top 10 guy is like 15 guys long. So
right.
At some point, yeah, somebody's going to get knocked out. And with O'Reilly in particular, it's like, well, he's not as good as Patrice Bergeron as a 200-foot center. And he doesn't score like a crazy amount of points. Like
he's not as good as Bergeron or Barkov. But it just seemed in the conversations I had with people for the survey and getting some stuff like off the record, everybody was just like over the fucking moon on O'Reilly, and I was stunned he didn't have the support.
Yeah, again, like I just think so much of this is still – I mean, look at the fucking voting totals, right? Like so much of this is still tied up in just like, well, he puts up a lot of points, scored a lot of goals, so he must be great.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, if we're properly valuing players for their defensive contribution, I think O'Reilly maybe should be in the top 10, but like he'd be a borderline case even if even if we were looking at it from that point of view. And so I don't know. I kind of go back, like, who was a bigger – when Buffalo traded him, like, I was just like, what the fuck are they doing? You know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And so you just kind of look at it and you go, like, well, yeah, he's had a history of being one of, let's say, the 15 best centers in the league for a million years. And he just – apart from when he – did he win
his first year in St. Louis. First year in St. Louis, he was great.
Did he win the Conn Smythe?
He did, yeah.
Yeah, he should have. And he probably should have been a top three MVP guy that year. But like apart from that, it's always like, yeah, that's like a really solid like B plus center. And so, yeah, a B plus center is maybe not going to make your top 10. And I think that's legal.
And let's like, if he's the 11th best center in the league, that means there are 20 teams in the league that he would immediately become their number one center, which in this league, quite possibly, like, the most important player on the roster. Like, that's a really good player. It's not it's not some insult here. Like, it's not like...
No, it's not. And we gave the guys a list of 30 from which to choose. And so he's better than the other, like, 19 guys on that list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good place to be.
I was a little surprised Pettersson didn't end up on it.
He had support. Yeah, I'm wondering. I mean, you know, the voting happened. The voting happened during the season. So, and particularly the early part of the season where he was off to a pretty bad start. So there might be some.
Yep.
Some. I can't call it recency bias because it's not recent, but like
at the time, recency bias.
Temporal bias. I guess I don't know. The other thing about the other list we put out was about goalies. And that list is just all over the fucking place. I mean, it's just whatever.
I thought a lot of it made sense, and then they would occasionally be like, "Well, Carey Price is obviously the best."
And I asked one of the players straight up, like, "Why do you keep putting Price over in all?"
Yeah, and his answer was like, "Well, because he's Carey Price," and it's like, "That's not Carey Price."
I know it's stupid, but the other thing that was interesting about that list was I talked to a coach that said he was really struggling with putting together a list of 10 goalies. Now, and part of it, I think, is probably like how many teams platoon their guys and what have you. But he said the other part of it is that if you go back 10 years and look at the top goalies in the league, like maybe there just aren't as many good ones in 2021.
Maybe there's more good ones. Maybe, like, I honestly think, and if you go back 10 years, that's one thing. But, you know, when people go like, 20 years ago, there you had Brodeur and you had Hasek and these
and a bunch
like,
of guys who like, were 840 goalies.
and now it's like goaltending in the NHL is getting very close to what I would refer to as having like the kicker problem in the NFL, where it's like, you know, kickers aren't good. No, actually the kickers are really good. There's just so many of them and there's so much randomness to their performance that you don't really need to think about them all that much. There's like two or three really good ones that you're happy to have on your team. There's obviously going to be a few every year that are going to be terrible and torpedo their team, and everyone else is just kind of interchangeable. And
absolutely.
And you just got to, you know, NFL GMs have figured out they don't go and give 7-year contracts to their kickers because they had a couple of good years. I feel like goalies are getting close to that, because if you try to explain to an NFL fan like that, you know, a new NFL fan would be like, "Who's the leading scorer in the league?" Well, every year it's the kickers are leading, score more points than anybody. Who is in the highest leverage situation? Well, other than quarterbacks, kickers have at least a game every year where like their team wins or loses based on what they do. And you'd go, wow, they must be the most important, most highly paid players in the league. And it's like, no, nobody even.
Yeah, actually, they're completely interchangeable outside of like five guys.
But it's because there's so many good ones and so much, and it's so hard to project their performance in any given year that you just grab a guy and hope that your guy's good. And if not, you go get a different guy. And that's,
yeah,
I think that's closer to what we're at than some sort of, there aren't that many good goalies.
Yeah. Unfortunately for a lot of NHL teams, their GMs have not gotten the message on like, you don't sign these guys for that long. So
my theory on goalies, you have three types of goalies in the league. You have your Vasilevskiy, Hellebuck tier of guys that are your absolute studs. You ride or die with them. They're the difference makers. They could be the MVP of your teams. And then you have teams that are really, really good and just need somebody who's competent.
Yep.
And that's your kind of like Philip Grubauer type, I think. Just like, don't fuck up. And then you have one, and I think the Leafs are kind of here right now, where you have a couple guys and you're like, sort of like them both, don't love either one of them, but if one of them catches fire, oh boy, we're going to be in good shape. That seems to be the other model.
And you just hope that you pick right.
Yes.
Right.
Because that model you just described is – that's – if in any given year, there's a very, very good chance that whoever wins the Stanley Cup is going to be using that model.
Yeah.
But it's also a really there's also a really good chance that some team that's going to be a total disaster is going to – because if you pick – you can have three goalies and you're like one of these three guys is probably going to have a career year. But you got to pick the right one. You got to ride them at the right time. And if all three don't have that season, then you look like an idiot as a GM.
That's right.
It's like, what did you really think these three guys were going to do it?
You could argue that's the model the Caps had the year they won, because they started out with Grubauer, right?
Yep.
And then made the change.
And look, like you could point to the Lightning last year and say there's an example of a team that had this, but they almost lost to Dallas, who was writing their 34-year-old backup, right? Like that's,
right. Who did that thing where Khudobin took over and he went fucking bonkers. You're right. Yep. Yeah.
It happens every year. There's a bunch of guys, and you go, but then it's easier said than done as a GM to sit there and go, I'm just going to bring in two or three competent guys and hope, because when hope doesn't work, you end up looking for a job.
Mm-hmm. A couple other things this week. Our bonus episode dropped yesterday as we did the podcast. It's a real fun one. It's the arcade coin-op arcade draft, where we each take seven categories and try to create the coolest arcade we can based on the classic games and other stuff. I got a text from a buddy of mine who's a listener of the show, and he made a really good point that beyond the pinball, we really shortchanged the like other tabletop games or the like other like hockey. Games you can play. Air hockey. We mentioned bubble hockey briefly, but like he said, Papa Shot was one that we slept on, and games like that. And I think that's a fair point. Like I was so laser focused on like shit with a joystick that I didn't think about
other stuff in the arcade.
Yeah,
so
same.
You could definitely make a case for some of those as well.
Like I ended up picking the drum game. Spoiler: who gives a shit? You should listen to it anyway. But I really kind of regret not picking skee ball or something like that to be part of the.
Yeah, collection. We just should have had a separate category for that kind of a skee ball or air hockey. You know, we fucked up. What do you want from us?
We didn't fuck up. Listen, it could have gone into any number of categories. I mean, skee ball is a classic game. Like it could have been there. You sir, still deserve, I think, MVP honors for remembering that pinball is a thing that happens in arcades.
Yeah, we're hearing that more and more that I did the best job.
But it's a super great episode, and hopefully you get a chance to check it out. Let's close it out with a little bit of something that half the audience absolutely loves, and half the audience will now turn off the podcast, and that'd be wrestling talk. It is WrestleMania week, WrestleMania 37, guys.
Wow. Incredible.
Very exciting. Yeah. Edge is wrestling because it is 2021.
Yeah. Can't all be winners, I guess.
And I'm doing my lapsed fans guide for ESPN.
One of the best. One of the best things to read.
Thank you.
Because I only watch the watch the pay-per-view, so I have no idea what the storylines are in any given.
I find this one a bit difficult to write about. It's just not a very compelling card outside of a few matches that have had a good build. Sean, your thoughts on WrestleMania becoming a two-night event, which is now they're doing this now for a couple of years.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll go back to it when we're closer to the normal times. I mean, it's better to do that than to do a 7-hour show.
Yeah, like that's the thing to say.
Those were just awful. Like the last few years, you had
it's been
like
brutal.
In some cases pretty compelling main events that just went over like a wet fart because the audience is exhausted. You can't do
absolutely
a 7-hour show and then expect your crowd to be on their feet for the main event.
Yeah,
so
this is why. Yeah. This is why Wrestle Kingdom's two nights, you know? The New Japan figured it out. You have the big card. People will show up for 2, 3.5, 4 hour cards and be fucking jacked the whole time, as opposed to, oh my god, it's another fucking tag team championship match. Yeah. The third one tonight.
Ever since they made the decision that everybody had to get on the show,
yeah,
and you know that you just you couldn't, which is always makes it weird when there's like one or two every year where you're like, why aren't they? Like you're using like 98% of the roster, but like you know, 20 years ago WrestleMania was just like 7 matches. There's like a world title match, tag team match. There's a couple, and most of the roster wasn't on the show because it just. That's not how it worked out. And then at some point they decided that everybody has to be on, and now suddenly it's, you know, there's way too many matches, let alone when you then do like the super long entrances and the 5-minute video package before everything. And like, let's have a celebrity come out and say, like, nobody wants the concert, man. Like, just move it along, please. We're begging.
Well, and now they're doing, like, to get everybody on the roster on the show, like, they're doing convoluted things. Like, AJ Styles is by far one of the best wrestlers working today. They have him in a tag team match against the New Day, and basically the setup is, hey, I decided I want to win a tag title. Like, that's the whole fucking thing. Yeah.
I think the Attitude Era really kick-started the whole, like, well, let's just have our biggest guys win the tag team. Like, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin and I think Mankind were tag team partners, and then you had the Rock and Sock Connection, then you had the Brothers of Destruction, and it was just like, yeah, like, everybody doesn't have to be a tag team champion. You can just have, like, mm-hmm. dedicated tag teams. That's actually allowed. And then they moved like into that. They leaned into that for a number of years, and then they were like, you know what? We all liked it better when it was just like the biggest names in the company, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
All right. So in honor of WrestleMania, we are going to do an overrated, underrated, favorite, least favorite. Someone suggested wrestling heels.
I'm so glad because I had a very funny idea. Well, I think it's very funny. You know, your mileage may vary. I think I've said before, my favorite kind of a wrestling heel is the cowardly heel.
Oh, yes.
Wouldn't it be funny if the cowardly heel in WWE, like the big name cowardly heel, was Braun Strowman? Because, you know, they...
Wow. Playing against type.
Yeah, and like, you know, you could go, oh, you know, he was diagnosed with some sort of a nerve problem where, he experiences more pain than he ever has in his career, you know? And so then, you put him in a submission hold and he's just going, ow, ah, you know, that kind of stuff. I thought that would be really funny.
I like that.
Just have, like, a huge fucking guy who's, like, very afraid of getting hit.
I love it.
That would be so funny to me, but they'll never do it.
I think that works.
So Eric Lindros, basically.
Wow.
Yes, that's exactly right. That would be so fucking funny is if they just had like the Big Show or whoever just be like, please don't hit me. I have a medical condition. That would fucking rock.
I've still shown up for the wrestling event, but I'm gonna ask.
Well, like, so then you have to do a thing where, like, you know, the general manager or the commissioner of Raw or whatever is like, no, you have to wrestle, and he's like, but I really don't want to. My doctor says I shouldn't.
Oh, that's good.
I think that would be so fucking cool.
All right, I got my list now. Okay, here we go. Overrated wrestling heel. I'll go first.
Yep.
Bradshaw. So they took Bradshaw from the APA. From first, he was a cowboy, and then they put him in the Acolyte Protection Agency.
Well, yeah, and so to be in the Acolyte Protection Agency, first he was a member of a cult, and then he became like a bounty,
a hired gun, yes. to rough up people. And then he became kind of like Brand X Ted DiBiase.
Yeah, because he's actually rich. Like that, they were just like, oh, like you're really rich. We can just like make you.
Yeah, so he lived the gimmick. He goes on Fox Business and talks about stocks and shit. I just never liked him. I never found him to be compelling. I never really found him to be the best worker. People did like him as a foil for other wrestlers.
But I didn't like him. Apparently, like a legitimately terrible human being.
Yeah, a huge ass.
Absolute awful. Like all sorts of stories of his behavior to other people just being like unforgivably bad. Like, I'm even saying in the context of pro wrestling, which is a garbage place.
Right.
Filled with garbage people, this guy stands out as the worst of the human garbage.
So this sounds like least favorite material, but I'll go overrated for Bradshaw because I do have a better least favorite.
Well, the other thing to say is you can say a lot of bad stuff about Bradshaw as a person and as a worker and that kind of thing. The Clothesline from Hell is a fucking cool finisher. He looks like he kills somebody, and that rocks to me.
I always did like that, you know, the – especially these days where like everyone's finisher is like, all right, I need the guy to stay completely still while I put each one of his limbs in a different position.
Yep.
And then I do a flip. Like, and his was just like, I'm going to hit you really hard in the face.
Yeah. I'm going to knock you on your ass.
Knock you unconscious. And then you won't be, I will just lie on top of you for 3 seconds so that you get pinned.
That'll
because
be
you are concussed. Yeah. There's something to be said for that one.
Mm. Overrated heel, Ryan.
Overrated heel. You know what? Mm-hmm. We just mentioned him. Ted DiBiase.
Oh, get out of here. Get out of town. What a joke. He's amazing. He's like the best heel.
I don't know. When
he kicked the basketball away from the little
kid. That was great. You know what? I take it back.
He used to stuff money in people's throats.
I take it back. I kind of forgot the like comedy aspect of Ted DiBiase.
The vignette.
Give me IRS.
Ted DiBiase, yeah, absolutely.
Give me IRS then.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
That's a fantastic choice.
Although, again, with the comedy thing, he comes out and he's like, I have a message for all the tax cheats in Providence, Rhode Island. And it's like... But yeah. I don't know.
Sure, I like it.
IRS.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Rotundo looks better as a different guy, but yeah.
Yeah. Is he the one – is he Bray Wyatt's dad?
Yes.
Is that how that family
– Yep.
Okay, it is, eh? That's always weird to me.
But birthed the Fiend.
The Fiend himself.
Yeah. He must have done – I mean, who else but an IRS agent could
produce a demon spawn?
Bring such evil into the world.
Oh, all the tax cheats in Providence, Rhode Island. It's the funniest fucking thing in the world. He was always mad that people were cheating on their taxes. And you know that's because, like, Vince got audited one year, right?
100%.
Like, that's the only reason IRS was a thing.
I mean, his name was Erwin R. Scheister. Yeah. That's
he came out in glasses.
Vince written all over it.
He knew IRS. He was wrestling that day, but he still put on a tie. Because he was an accountant first.
Have I ever told you? You know what? I don't know that I'm allowed to tell this story. Never mind.
All right, that's fine. Okay.
My overrated heel is everybody in the NWO, with the possible exception of Hulk Hogan, because they weren't heels. Like Hall and Nash and those guys, none of them were playing heels.
They were heels initially, though.
They were heels in this it initially, but once they became the NWO, they were coming out. They were doing catchphrases, playing to the crowd, being cool.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Which is why none of the good guys could get over against them because they were cool heels.
They were
too
Nash
cool.
Were great. They were great characters, but they weren't
too cool.
Heels. Yeah, they weren't. They weren't heels in any sense, and they weren't trying to. They were trying to get themselves over, and you know, I mean, you talked about like heels, you know, the cowardly here, whatever. Like this was the exact opposite. These were like, yeah, we're too cool to even bother with any of this, and so you've got all these good guys trying to get over, and they can't, and that eventually leads to problems.
By the way, that kind of reminded me, and I'm going to amend my overrated again. When the Undertaker is a heel, that sucks.
Yes.
Okay. What about like the initial, like the very first Undertaker when he comes?
I was like 4 years old. I don't. Yeah, I don't. I don't have a big opinion, but
you were right at the right intellectual level then.
That's
appreciate
right.
Appreciate what they were going
to actually think he was like a ghost or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
but yeah, you know, he squashed Superfly Jimmy Snuka at WrestleMania 7, his first match of the streak or whatever, and.
Hmm.
I guess I don't really think about him, but like any time they tried to make him like I'm actually evil, and it's like, dude, you know, I remember 2 years ago when you were riding a motorcycle. Fuck off.
Hmm. I was reminded the other day that Jim Ross tried to get over the nickname Booger Red for when the Undertaker was the Biker Taker.
Yeah.
And I never understood that, but it was a thing that happened.
Mm.
Underrated heel. Jake the Snake Roberts. Jake the Snake Roberts.
Yeah, he was great.
Became super facey. Like, people really liked him during his feuds with, like, who is it? Like, Adrian Adonis or somebody? Like,
yeah, he was always feuding with, like, beautiful men. Like, the model Rick Martel was one of his big.
The Rick Rude feud was one of the all.
Oh, and Rick Rude. Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Boy, he just hated when guys were hot, huh?
Yeah, he hated hot guys. You're taken away from the attention the snake gets. So, from a psychological standpoint, he was an awesome heel. He just didn't do it enough when he got to the WWF.
He was a little too good at it. And even back then, like, it's not like today where as soon as someone comes out and they're like, I'm a heel, and they do anything right, and the audience is like, we like you now. And then they're like, okay, so he's a good guy, and the audience is like, oh, boo, then. And it's like, Jesus.
He was also saddled with, like, two things that people absolutely loved, which was the DDT and the snake.
Yeah.
So it was kind of hard to be a heel.
He looked fucking cool. The haircut and the big mustache. Like, he fucking – Jake the Snake Roberts is fucking
– He was my favorite as a kid.
Yeah.
And like the classic – he was the classic wrestler who didn't need a title ever because he was already – and apparently – The thing with they at one point they were going to have him do a program with Hogan, which you'd think would have been perfect, but Hogan didn't want to do it because he knew that
Jake Snake Roberts would make
Jake was going to get cheered over him, and he wouldn't work with anyone who that would happen with.
Underrated heel.
I have about 1,000. I'll give two honorable mentions here. Mr. Perfect. I liked that he did everything perfectly. And, of course, I have to say it. Roman Reigns as a heel fucking rocks.
Yeah.
He's so good at it.
It's recognition now, but still probably not a lot of people know yet.
Can I just say, like, I'm correct, right? They're doing WrestleMania in front of a crowd this year?
Yes.
They are, yeah.
And it's they had a crowd in – is this the first time?
First crowd since then.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we've – for years – they've been trying to get Roman Reigns over as a good guy. The crowd craps on everything he does. They finally turn him heel. He's, from what I've heard, been doing great.
He's incredible at it.
And I bet you he comes out and the crowd cheers him now.
Yeah,
because they refuse to go along with anything that, like, the guy's working so hard to get over as a bad guy, and they just.
Well, it's funny. They added Daniel Bryan to a match between Roman Reigns and Edge, and they also basically turned Edge heel. So you have two heels in a match against, like, one of the most popular wrestlers of all time, Daniel Bryan. So
he's doing the Daniel Bryan gimmick of, like, no, they don't want me to win shit.
The underdog against all odds. So they're doing everything they can to try to get heel heat on the other two guys by putting them in the ring with Daniel Bryan.
It's going to work.
Which is great, because, I think if you've got a guy like Edge who took 10 years to come back from – you know, life-threatening neck surgery, you really want to bail on his good guy push before you've even put him in front of one single fan.
That's fine.
That's great. That's the real commitment.
But Edge was always at his best when he was a heel.
He was.
So.
Yeah.
Anyway, my actual answer for the most underrated heel of all time has left my brain, so please come back to me.
Oh boy.
Okay.
All right.
Well, you don't you have 998 more?
Well, do you want me to just go down a list?
No, I know. Okay. Well, Sean, go. Who's your underrated heel?
This guy, maybe isn't even underrated, but I feel like just the whole position is underrated. Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Oh, hell yeah.
Just probably the best ever heel manager.
I would say properly rated as the greatest of all time.
But I would say the greatest manager of all time, but I think maybe even still underrated because like,
well, there's generations that only know him from like being on the WCW broadcast team.
Yeah. Like, and also, but that. Just like how good he was at getting anyone. You just put anybody with him and he would get out there and get that guy over as a guy you hated. Because and then you would wait.
He was the weasel.
Yeah, and you would wait to see his weaselly manager. Like that's a thing that doesn't really happen anymore. But the idea of like the good guy who's got to fight the bad guy, but that what you really want is for him to get rid of the bad guy so that the skinny little weaselly manager will finally have to get his comeuppance and get, you know, thrown around. And like with Heenan, it happened every 2 months and it was still great every time because he was so good.
The best example of that was he turned Andre heel. That's an impossible thing to do.
Just by walking out with him. Heyman's kind of like that now, but again, we're in the era now where like Heyman's so good at it that people are like, oh, he is good at it, so I'm going to cheer even though he's trying to get me to boo. And it's whereas back then you just like, oh, like when they would do, like they would go through towns and have, you know, good guy against bad guy, and then like the blow off would be, okay, now it's good guy against bad guy, and Bobby Heenan has to wrestle. And you're like, oh, in his singlet. This is going to be great.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I think that's a plot line or a storyline that they did when we were young that I wish they would do more of, which is the heel manager has an unending supply of people he's throwing at the champion.
Yeah, the Heenan fan.
To try to figure out. Yeah. I love that. Dude, that, you know, it's like how Rita Repulsa would keep sending monsters to take on the Power Rangers.
Yep. Yeah.
I love that. And I don't do it. Like, I love the idea of just like, I'm going to find someone else and throw them at you. And he's like, I'm going to beat this guy too. Fuck you. Like, it's a great,
the best.
And it paid off so great. Device. Like when Hogan finally turned heel and Heenan was there to be like, I have been telling you for a decade that this guy was garbage. And you're just like, okay.
Right.
Anyway, I remembered the great. I think maybe in terms of box office, the greatest heel of all time is The Rock, right? Like,
yeah,
when he was a heel, it's so easy to forget now that he's the biggest movie star in the world. But when he was a heel, people hated his guts, and he was fucking incredible at it.
Yeah,
and he was so good at it that like every now and then he would just have to go back to being a good guy. But then he could bring it back like the. When he was becoming like the movie star and he had that heel run where he would come out and like start to do the catchphrase and the audience would go and he'd be like, no, you don't get to do that.
You don't get that, right.
He gave a heel promo. Well, it was when he was just like kind of on the fence, like, and then he came out and the audience was booing him and he gave this promo where he was like, think very carefully if you want to go down this road. Like, if you want to do this, we'll do this, but you know, and then at the end of it, he started to do the catchphrase, and the audience started to sing along. And he was like, "No, you don't get to do that anymore. You made your decision. You're not doing like we're not doing the catchphrases. We're not doing anything." And like the crowd was furious, but he was, he was phenomenal.
Yeah, humble.
I loved it. Favorite heel, easy one. Vince McMahon. It's got to be.
Yeah,
Mr. McMahon is the greatest heel in the history of professional wrestling.
Everybody hates their fucking boss. You know?
And he played the role perfectly.
And the perfect balance of being like a terrible guy that like you wanted to see him get his ass kicked, but then every now and then he actually would. Or he actually would, like, you know, he wasn't one of these guys where it was like you never got to see anything happen to him.
Yeah. Because he
knew. It was just enough that...
And then
he would sell the hell out. Like when Austin would come out and spray him with beer, like he didn't act like, you know, I'm too cool. I'm not in. He would sell it.
He got hit in the head with a bedpan on national TV. Yes.
Coincidentally, also my favorite announcer. I think Vince is a tremendously underrated announcer.
Well, the problem with Vince as the announcer is he doesn't know any of the moves, and he
doesn't know
what a maneuver. You know.
Yes.
And also another legitimately horrible heel.
Horrible,
but
for sure, absolutely. Yeah. Favorite heel?
You know, recent revelations about his politics aside, freaking the paragon of virtue himself, Chris Jericho, is I talk about it all the time. That program with Dean Malenko in like 95 or so,
so good.
Is the greatest program in the history of wrestling, as far as I'm concerned. It's fucking so funny. It's incredibly again, a guy you want to see get beat, and he would, you know, he was a cowardly heel, so he would run away all the time. But the thing I think about all the time with him is he would lose a match, like, by count out or disqualification, so he would keep the title. And then he would be like throw a big temper tantrum, and he'd rip the ring announcer's tuxedo jacket.
Right.
And then the next week he'd come out, I really want to apologize. You know, that's not me. And to make up for it, I have here a brand new tuxedo jacket. I got your exact measurements. And the guy tries it on. He's like, oh, this is nice. Thanks, Chris. And then he loses the match and he rips the jacket. Like, this happened for a month straight. And like, they would do two shows a week, like, unfucking real. Like, oh my God. And, you know, I was in the building for the Cruiserweight Battle Royal, where he was trying to find anybody besides Dean Malenko. Yeah, I was in Worcester, Massachusetts, and I was there.
Because that was so, like, Dean Malenko, a guy who famously was amazingly talented, but like,
no personality.
Never really get over with the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And the pop that he got that night.
Yeah, because so Jericho, you know, Jericho's introducing all these cruiserweights who are very specifically not Dean Malenko, and then it turns out one of them was Dean Malenko under a luchador mask. And yeah, when he took that
mask off,
people went fucking bonkers, and they should have. It was, you know, that, oh man.
It's good stuff.
Was that also the same one where when he was introducing everyone, he was like running down?
Yeah, he would be like, oh, Kidman, you know, Kidman, I got some calamine lotion for you. You have like a 1 in 8 chance of winning this thing.
So good. Favorite heel, Sean?
I'll go back a little bit further, but Roddy Piper.
Amen.
Absolute, I mean, the number one heel during, like, the Hogan era, and he was just so good. The promos, the Piper's Pit, everything.
Another example. He got too good.
He could get other people over, right? They had him do the talk show, basically, so that some guy who wasn't over would come out and stand next to Roddy Piper, and you hated that guy by the end of it, because, and, you know, he had the great gimmick with Orton, where he was, like, had the cast, and so he would just whack the guy in the head with his cast that he had for 3 straight years. Great stuff. Again, another guy never needed the title because he just
too good.
And the other thing about Piper that was interesting was, and you don't see this anymore at all, he almost never wrestled.
Yeah,
like, he would do the house show, but you never saw, like, if you saw him actually in the ring, it was a big deal.
Yep.
It wasn't, you know, he wasn't out there just every week, you know, showing off his moves and that. Like, it was a big deal to get him out there.
Yeah. Least favorite heel for me, very brief run as a heel, but I still think it was such a insanely bad decision on every front. Do you remember when they turned Dusty Rhodes to the NWO?
No, but I do know that they turned everybody in WCW at some point.
Like, again, like the symbol of WCW joins the NWO for no apparent reason other than he just wanted to be like with the cool kids, and made no sense storyline wise, made no sense, made the NWO less cool for having Dusty Rhodes in it. So I would say that is my least favorite heel by a country mile was when they turned Dusty Rhodes heel.
Yeah, I feel like I feel like there's a lot of them where it's like, oh, this guy was a face and we had to turn him heel, and that actually didn't work at all. You know, here's who it is. It's fucking Michael Cole. Remember when they tried to make Michael Cole the heel announcer?
Yeah,
oofy,
good.
Doofy.
I like that.
That sucked.
Yeah, I like that. It's a good choice.
And, like, I don't even think Corey Graves is that good at it or whatever, but, like, you got to have a guy who's a heel announcer who's, like, really, really, really good. And if he's even, like, a little bit not good at it, it shows and it makes the whole broadcast stink. So, I got to go with Michael Cole, like, who I think has become a perfectly good announcer. Like, you know, if you had told me that 20 years ago or whatever, I'd have been like, there's absolutely no way. But he's good now, good enough. And, yeah, it's because they know not to make him a heel anymore.
I'll say, well, first of all, I just want to clarify one thing, because I know people are going to ask me this, why I didn't pick the Hart Foundation, the 1997 Hart Foundation for any of this, because they weren't heels. They were the baby faces.
They were the faces, yeah, absolutely.
And, so that's for another list.
Now that's a gimmick.
My least favorite is literally any authority figure heel after the McMahon Bishop, like, mid to late 90s era. Like, basically,
I like that.
Other
That's
than,
a good choice.
It's been 20 years of the same stupid character, especially like any McMahon's kids or like anyone who's not anyone who's a McMahon that's not Vince. But anybody like this, we're the authority, we're the what? Oh my god. And it's like it's the laziest way to try to get a heel. They just come out and they're like, you have to defend the title. Just take the title off the guy. If you don't want him to have the belt and you have the power to do that, just take it off him. Why are you making him like fight eight guys? And oh, I can't wait till he gets his hands, and then they never do. It's just it was great with McMahon. Like, McMahon's the best ever. Bishop was kind of came before him and was pretty good at it. Other than that, it's awful.
I will say, though, I don't like seeing him on my TV, but I will never not respect Shane McMahon, because he is willing to die for professional wrestling, and that's cool. You know what
it's
like?
But it's not, because he gets his credit, like, oh, you know, he's the boss's son. He could go out and take it easy, but he's out there taking these big bumps. Yeah, and then he doesn't wrestle again for 6 months.
No, I know.
And he's setting the bar for these guys who have to go out every night. And
well, the problem is that they when they make him wrestle, he does wrestle for 6 months straight, and you're like, fuck, I'm so sick of Shane McMahon. And then he almost kills himself, and you're like, yeah, I guess that was worth it. You know what I mean? Like,
maybe the first couple of times, but I don't need to see his puffy red face, you know, gasping for air 15 seconds.
Was it Kurt Angle? Was it Kurt Angle who threw him into the... That's like one of the greatest spots in the history of professional wrestling, when the fucking thing didn't break.
He was trying to throw him through what I think was supposed to be breakaway glass.
Yes.
But it wasn't breaking, and so he just kept throwing him harder and harder.
The like one
at
where
one point
the one
he
where
throws he, him and he bounces off of it and lands on his head.
Lands on his head. That's specifically the spot I'm thinking of. Like, I don't know how you don't how you can't respect Shane McMahon after that. You know what I mean? Like, as much as I hate seeing
I don't think
him,
he had much of a choice. Like, it's true. Like, an Olympic wrestler is deciding he's going to, like, but yeah, that's like a weird underrated wrestling moment. Like, the time Kurt Angle
almost killed Shane McMahon,
almost killed his boss's son on live television.
That rocks.
Like, that was a choice.
Wrestling's so fucking cool.
Well, there you go. That's why we spent half the show on it. That is Fucks It for this week. Everybody enjoy WrestleMania this weekend.
Hell yeah, let's go.
Hope you enjoyed a Remembering Some Heels segment. I'm Greg Wyszynski.
Talk about wrestling too much. I don't like it.
It's like once a year. It's like
that's
all
not true. You know that,
that
space.
That
it's
is
not true.
Absolutely.
Well, hold on. Do we talk about wrestling or politics more? Because every time I see a one-star review on fucking iTunes, because we talk about politics too much. Is what they say.
Yeah. Well, I brought up Biden.
Sorry, we said racism was bad for 3 seconds. And upset you so badly. You had to
I know.
Us on every review site.
That's
triggered. I'm Greg Wyszynski. You can read my stuff on ESPN. I will tease this little Q&A with a certain New York Rangers defenseman coming up on Friday.
Tony D'Angelo, folks. Here he
comes. Right, baby.
Politics
me and Tony
are back.
D sitting down. That's right. Sitting down. You know? He says, after every answer, I go, hey, watch your tone.
He gets a big kick out of it, I'm sure. He's loving that.
He loved it. There's nothing that Tony D'Angelo loves more than me. The top 10 lists were great. Do check them out. My column runs on Thursdays. Also, Emily and I, obviously, will be doing a ton of writing and video stuff for Trade Deadline next week, provided
things happen. And there you go. Oh, also, of course, as I should, listen to Mizanpod with me and Lambert and Ruby this week. We are in week two of Top Chef. If you're going to love it. All the people that listen to the show and love it and don't watch Top Chef, you're weirdos, but we do love you.
That to me is truly insane. Oh, I have no context for this. It's great. What? Okay. If you say so. Yeah, sign up for Early Prospect. Sign up for the Puck Soup Patreon. Do all the stuff that you got to sign up for. And it's good. All of it's good. That's my solemn vow to you.
Oh, nice.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah.
Find me at the Athletic. I've got my ranking today of all 32 teams and who's under the most pressure to do something in the next few days.
Ooh.
Leading up to the deadline and other stuff coming later in the week. And check out my other podcast, The Athletic Hockey Show with Ian Mendez on Thursdays.
There it is. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to Puck Soup. We'll join you next week. Take care. Oh, we'll talk about all the trade deadline stuff.
Wow. Happened.
All right. Bye.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.